This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, wake up. Why are you sleeping in a tree?
Oh, sorry, Chris. I don't know. I was just outside, and spot was really comfortable.
How do you keep from falling?
Yeah, well, I, you know, just hold on real tight. You know, I just kind of situate myself between the different branches, and I don't know. I can't really explain it. I'm just really good at sleeping in trees.
I understand. I talked to your fiance, actually, and she told me that you've been doing that for about 10 years.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Luckily, I mean, in here in Washington, there's so many trees to choose from, so.
Right. Well, that's great, right? Although it rains a lot here, so.
Yeah, I tend to sleep in, you know, Gore-Tex.
Did you set up an actual tree inside the house there? So, sort of like over in the corner to recreate that outside environment?
You know, I was going to try, but the ceilings aren't super tall in the apartment. It just doesn't feel the same. So I just put a hammock in the patio there.
All right. Well, if this sounds familiar to anyone, it is pulled straight out of the plot for the sixth season episode, Time's Orphan.
The epic episode.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to borrow a page from our sister show, To the Journey.
To the Journey!
And we're going to do a rewrite. I've never thought about doing these, Matthew, on The Orb very much because I generally don't want to rewrite DS9 episodes, but this is an episode that has never worked for me, unlike Children of Time, which I really didn't like when it first came on, but have come to really love. This one still does not work for me, and I thought it would be interesting to see what we could come up with as a way to possibly make this episode halfway decent.
You know, Chris, it is one of those things. Deep Space Nine, we don't normally think of as having episodes that were clunkers or fixer-uppers, but there are a few. I mean, season one has a few as well. I mean, Move Along Home might be one that we have to talk about
one day. We've already fixed that one, Matthew. We did our show on here with Drew where we did it as a TOS episode.
That's true. We did fix that episode. So, you know, there are some episodes that just don't really work. And it happens with every single series of any TV show. You'll find those episodes just doesn't really work for anyone. So I think this is definitely one of those.
I think what's unique about this one within the context of Deep Space Nine is that it comes at the end of season six. Like you would think season one, two, I can see something like this fitting in. But this episode just feels very much out of place. And before we talk about it anymore, I do want to be clear up front that I don't want to belittle this episode because I think that what they're trying to do here, what they're trying to address is actually a very important and very serious issue where they decided to make Molly a feral child. And it's unthinkable and tragic that this could happen to a child. And it does happen in the real world. And sometimes it happens because you hear stories about someone who is lost, you know, and raised by animals. I mean, Tarzan is an example. There's, you know, Mowgli from the Jungle Book, for example. Or to kind of tie it to Star Trek, there's the legend that Romulus and Remus were raised by wolves as well. So that happens. But also it can happen where children are neglected by their parents or abused. And so what we see Molly going through internally is it can be heartbreaking. And I actually, as much as I'm watching this episode, I'm thinking like, this doesn't work and this doesn't work and this doesn't work. There are moments with Molly, the older Molly, there are moments with Miles and Keiko as well, where as a parent, like, it's really moving to me and it can be very emotional.
Well, Chris, and so, I would definitely echo that. And I would also say my first thing to fix this episode is if you had done this in like season 3,
okay,
it would probably have worked better just because it would have fit more of the style of the show then. I think what you said, you know, this is the end of season 6. We've been in this war stories and everything. There's a lot of things going on Deep Space Nine, the least of which is the fact that this is actually the last time we ever see Worf and Dax together as a couple before she dies. There's a lot going on, and it doesn't feel like an episode that fits the context that it's in. And I think that's probably one of its biggest failings. It's not necessarily just the episode, because honestly, it's just kind of a mediocre Star Trek episode. It's not terrible. It's not the best. It's just there, you know, and there's some good things about it that I actually do like.
Right. So yeah, I agree on that. You know, Matthew, I don't, as a Star Trek episode, I still don't know if this even works as a mediocre Star Trek episode. So I wanted to point that out first, though, about the feral child part, because I just think it's important not to belittle what they're portraying about the trauma that a child would experience and how they would have to overcome that, as well as the trauma that the parents would experience. So I just want to talk about this as a Star Trek episode. But to get into that, this episode I feel is doomed from the beginning, because first of all, they're trying to do something here that I think can't work on television as a television episode. They mention that they wanted to do a straight sci-fi story. Ira Stephen Bear mentioned that it had been a long time since they had done a science fiction episode. You know, some episodes are part of the DS9 story, and then some episodes just work as pure science fiction, like Far Beyond the Stars, for example, or I think The Visitor works that way as well. And I think this is an interesting concept if it's a science fiction novel, where you can really take a character that you don't know yet, and the story is about this character that has had this experience that Molly has, and you can take the time in the novel to actually tell the full story and how it affected this person and how they overcame it. And it feels very out of the blue here, because it's Molly, who we're familiar with, and it's the O'Briens, and then Keiko's back as well. And this also was, this episode was rejected 3 times by Ira Stephen Bear prior to this, that Rene Echevarria had pitched it to him. It's actually a story conceived of by Joe Minoski for TNG to get rid of Alexander. They wanted to write Alexander off the show, or Joe Minoski wanted to write Alexander off the show. And so the idea here was that Alexander would get lost on a hunting trip and fall through a time portal, and then he would come back and he's mad because his father abandoned him and all, but it was to get rid of Alexander. But instead it turns into a Molly story. And also, as I ramble on here, another reason I think that it was doomed from the beginning is that it's a story that had been rejected over and over and over. And then they came back to it because they needed another story near the end of the season, and it needed to be a bottle episode to save money. And so they pull this out and they dust it off and they change it around to make it about Molly. So knowing all that, I mean, would you think this would possibly work in the first place?
No. And the other reason I think it doesn't work, Chris, is because the sci-fi in is lazy, too. We've seen it before, and it's a the biggest issue I had with this is that it is a very Voyager-esque episode. We're going to pull all the toys out of the toy box. We're going to make sure they're all back in the toy box when the episode is over. So there's almost, there's absolutely no effect on even Molly. I mean, there's a little hint at the end that maybe there's something, but it's never followed up on again. We're never going to hear about this again. It is inconsequential as an episode for the series. So if it never happened, we would never know. And I think that's the disappointing part.
So here are my notes, Matthew, from the viewing yesterday to prepare for this. The ending renders the episode pointless. Right?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it makes no sense. Just while we're on this topic, okay, I got a tweet. You know, I tend to tweet like I'm watching this episode on TV Tag, and that goes out as tweets. I got a reply from Ron Bromit on Twitter. And Ron says, okay, well, here's actually what happened. I was looking through Memory Alpha, and people do memorable quotes. Mm-hmm. And under memorable quotes, the first thing listed for this episode is, oh, bollocks.
Yes.
Miles O'Brien. And I was thinking, like, okay, so of this episode, that's what you pulled out of it as memorable. Because as bad as the story is and as poorly written and constructed as it all is, as I said a moment ago, there are parts of this episode which I find very touching and moving. And there's great stuff in this episode between Dax and Worf.
Oh, yes.
And that's what you pull out as a memorable quote, oh, bollocks. And I'm thinking, who writes this Memory Alpha stuff? Sometimes I just scratch my head about what people take away from episodes who write this. But what this person tweeted to me, though, was, Time's Orphan was a horribly written episode. I guess I would agree with that post about the memorable quote. Worst written DS9 episode that I can think of. If Molly saves her child self and returns her to her parents, then she would have never grown up as she did to save herself. Exactly. So what he's saying here is exactly what you're thinking when you're watching the episode, right? Like, this doesn't make any sense when you see Molly, the grown Molly, disappear at the end.
Well, and you did nail a couple things that I love. Man, the Worf and Dax here is just perfect. I mean, it couldn't be any more perfect. The way that these two are clicking, God, it could have been its own Star Trek show, and I would have loved it. The Worf and Dax show, I mean, they're a classic comedy, you know, sitcom duo right there. And the way they play off of each other is beautiful. I mean, and the poignancy of the fact that she's going to be dead soon, you know, I mean, especially when you're rewatching this, it just pulls at your heartstrings. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And then, honestly, what's sad about this, too, is there's some great O'Brien stuff here. O'Brien and Keiko having to deal with what's going on with their family. And it's one of the few times that I really enjoy Keiko in the series, because her heart for her family and her husband and her just her children and everything is just fantastic. So what's going on with them is great. It's just that the rest of the storyline can't support the good. I mean, the good here deserves a better episode.
It does. And while we're sticking here with things that we like about the episode, all the things that you just mentioned, yes, and small moments too, like when Kira is holding Kira Yoshi, and she makes the comment about maybe wanting kids one day, and they cut to Odo, and it's just this very subtle look on his face, but you can sense he knows that's something that he can never give her.
Right, right. Which, yeah, again, just these small little things. And this was, you know, this is where I can't say it's the worst written Deep Space Nine episode ever, because the writers do throw in these things, and then the actors just take those and run with them. And you could tell at this point, I think Deep Space Nine is just firing on all cylinders, even though this is a clunker of an episode in its conception. What's actually happening inside of it with its characters, for the most part, is great. Because we will carry on what happens with Dax and Worf. And there is going to be some carryover a little bit with the O'Briens, the older ones, because Keiko and the kids are going to have to leave the station again. and Miles had made the promise to Molly that she would never leave again. But he's going to have to send them away again one last time because they're not there.
Keiko says, like, that's a really big promise that you made.
Right. Yeah. And so there are some things that play off. It's just, again, the rest of it, it doesn't support this good. Yeah. That's just too sad. That's sad.
I think, again, before we get to things that we dislike, things that we do like about it, I also love Odo letting them go to take Molly.
That's so awesome.
Because, I mean, it just showed he's such a different character at that point than he was early on. You know, first couple of seasons, he would have held to the letter of the law, you know, but here, and he makes them, and he plays with them too. Like, I'm so disappointed in you. If anyone could have broken someone out of jail and gotten them off the station, I thought it would have been you, Chief. And he makes them think, like, I'm not going to let you go. And he's like, go. Just go.
That was one of the best scenes, again. It really does show just, I guess, the small little bits of the character arcs that we're seeing kind of play out in this episode that are connecting with the rest of the series really well. And those small moments are really fantastic.
Well, one of my favorite quotes from the episode is when Jadzia tells Worf, talk about losing perspective.
Oh my gosh, it's so great.
That was a great line because of, and again, it's supported by her back history as Curzon with Klingons, right?
Well, and then what I really loved too was at the end of the episode where O'Brien and Keiko are talking, and he mentions that Sisko is going to be his advocate in front of Starfleet, and I loved that, you know, Keiko said, well, if anybody can make Starfleet see, it's him. And I really liked seeing that these people and just how they believe in their captain. And I think that it reminds me of I think the power of Sisko as a character at that point in Starfleet. He has a ton of pull, and you're reminded really of just how persuasive he can be too. And so I really liked that line as well. I mean, because Sisko's not in the episode hardly at all, but this is really good.
Well, going on to things that we dislike, and I know there are many, many of them, and I mentioned a few already, but you talked about great moments between Miles and Keiko, and I agree that there are a lot of those that connect with me really well now as a parent with children who are older than the O'Brien's kids. But I felt that the insistence of Miles and Keiko that Molly must stay with them and that she can only connect with them and somehow they are the only ones who can get through to her and help her through this. I felt that it went on, and this sounds strange to say, that it went on a bit too long, because one of my other complaints about the episode is that this type of story doesn't work as a 45-minute TV episode because there's not enough time. Is something that I'll talk about with my rewrite. But if you just try to push the time part out a little bit and know that things have to move along more quickly, I think that plays into the fact that I think that they should have come to the conclusion sooner that maybe she needs professional help and they cannot provide for her here on the station. And I think as hard as it would be to let your child go away somewhere, as a parent, you ultimately want what's best for your child. You know that they are their own person. And if it becomes clear that you're not going to be able to solve this problem for them, but maybe someone else can and they can be happy, then you have to consider that. And eventually that's what Miles does. I feel like Keiko never really came to that point herself, which bothered me a bit as the mother. That she didn't. There's the scene later on where you can tell that Miles has finally realized that he has to let Molly go and figure out what's best for her. And Keiko is accusing him of giving up and she's going to stick with it. And finally she agrees to his plan, but I feel as a mother, like, I don't know, she was way too stubborn on this topic, I thought.
Yeah, you know, I thought of that too, Chris, except that I was thinking the whole time, why aren't they getting professional help for this person? Doesn't Starfleet have some of the best counselors and therapists in the galaxy?
Exactly. But
isn't that what
Counselor
Troy is for? You know, right, that kind of person. Station.
And that's why Sisko is saying that, like, she needs to be moved somewhere.
Right. But it also just reminded me of kind of the... I know that Deep Space Nine was getting away from the whole, like, counselor thing that Moore and Ira Stephen Bear kind of bristled at a little bit. But mm-hmm. This is the point where it would make sense to have a counselor on the station, you know?
Oh, sure.
But it also reminded me of just a quick fix I would have done, maybe, is... wouldn't it be interesting if this is how they had introduced Ezri Teagan to have her be the one helping Molly get through this? And that's how I would introduce her a couple mm-hmm. episodes before the big, you know, issue that happens. So
going back to our feedback show from last week where that was something we discussed. Maybe that could be.
Yep, exactly. So that's just a quick fix right there that could really change the whole episode and the season.
This is still right at the end of season 6.
Yep.
Yeah, this is right here. I was also disturbed a little bit by the way that they... Was it a cargo bay that they had built this area for Molly, where she has a tree, you know, she has some rocks and she has some grass, and they would go in and visit her and they would bring her food. But it felt like the O'Briens are concerned about their daughter, yet it's almost like she's in a zoo, like they're treating her as a pet. And I know that wasn't the intention, but I feel like it came across that way on screen a bit.
Huh, I hadn't actually thought of that, because I was thinking the opposite, is that they had tried to bridge her world with their world because they have couches in there. There's actually carpet on the ground. And instead of it being hard, you know, she has her tree in the grass, but they're really trying to kind of edge her away from that back into their world, which, again, another quick fix to me for this episode is just make the O'Briens have to move to that planet for a few months. Because, another very quick fix to this episode. They have to move to that planet for a few months, like Keiko does, with to help take care of Molly. And O'Brien just goes there on the weekends or whatever. Or he takes leave. You know, I mean, again, very quick fix. And then it makes it a whole, like, you can skip maybe a little bit of time, you know, like, maybe make this a month-long episode.
See, that's where, that makes sense, right? And that's logically what you should do, right? Like, if she needs this planet, don't use the Holo Suite. You just go to the planets in the Bajoran sector in the first place. And we all know how much Keiko likes to run away from the station so she can go and look at plants and flowers and all, because she's a botanist. So it makes sense, like, it would be something she would enjoy too, I think, and it would be healthy for Molly, but you can't do that in a 45-minute episode. So it's a big flaw in the entire concept of the story. The other thing that, well, I already mentioned, we mentioned, because we had the person on Twitter who tweeted this, the same point, that the ending renders the episode pointless.
It literally is one of the few Deep Space Nine episodes that we get that is a big red reset button.
It is.
I mean, Children of Time resets, but it has a huge impact on the crew.
It carries forward.
Exactly.
Yes, it has an impact.
Especially
on
especially with the Odo and Kira relationship. Yeah, and then the rest of the crew just kind of dealing with the weight of everything that had happened to them and the people that they lost. They had started to grow close to these people, accept what was going to happen to them, and then they're kind of snapped back to that this isn't going to happen. So talk about, like, whiplash emotionally.
Yeah. The other thing, and this is a nitpick, and some people will say that, oh, I don't care anything about this, but I've heard other people say that it does bother them, and it bothers me, is the casting. So Hana Hate, who plays the younger Molly, is of Japanese descent. Well, Michelle Krusiak, who plays the older Molly, is Taiwanese. And so this is Hollywood does this all the time, and it really pulls me out of the story because, I mean, I live in Asia, and so Japanese, Taiwanese, Chinese, Koreans, very different, both in behaviors, mannerisms, appearance, very different. And Hollywood has this attitude that all Asians are Asian. You know, it's just mix and match Asians. And it's one thing if you have a character who is supposed to be Japanese, but they're actually Korean, the actress, you know, and that happens. I mean, we see that with Hoshi, for example. But that's okay if it's one character all the way through. I can let that go. But in a story where this is supposed to be the same person who just went through a time portal and came back, then you're dealing with the fact that, okay, she's older and her ethnicity changed.
Yeah.
For me personally, it actually is. And I know for a lot of people, it's not an issue whatsoever. But for me personally, it always has kind of pulled me out of the story a little bit.
I was actually thinking that what pulls me out of the story with Molly in general is the fact that she doesn't look anything like O'Brien. She looks like, right. like she's only Asian. Like, yeah. O'Brien is Irish.
That can happen. I mean, that I know we have lots of people in Japan, like my children, of course, who are half Asian and half European. And it depends. Like, sometimes you can't really tell.
That's so, interesting. Yeah,
that doesn't bother me as much.
Well, Chris, I was kind of wondering, I've mentioned a few quick fixes to the episode, but did you have any that you had thought of just that you could, you know, basically just shift a couple of things and you don't really have to rewrite the entire episode? You just do this and it really makes a better episode.
All right. So quick fix. I think you and I had one that was exactly the same, which was not make this episode.
Yes.
That was one. That's a quick fix. Another one would be to make Worf and Dax the A story.
Oh, yes.
Because this episode, if that had been the A story, this could have been a really great episode because that's really interesting. And the sad part is that was put in last minute because this story originally did not have a B story. It was just the Molly story. And the episode was 9 minutes short. And they realized that they needed to have a B story. And so they came up with this whole thing with Worf and Dax and put it in here. It's actually the best part of the episode.
Oh, goodness. I mean, hands down, they are literally just acting their hearts out. And the chemistry on screen at that point between the two is perfect. I want to watch a show about them.
So quick fix, flip it, and that's the A story. So that would be one. I mean, otherwise quick fixes, I was watching this episode and I was thinking, okay, what am I going to do for my rewrite? Like, how do you make this better? And I was having trouble for a while figuring out how to make this better because I don't like Michelle Cruciak's acting. The portrayal of older Molly, I don't think it comes off well. And the thing about this episode, and as I said up front, like, I don't want to belittle the subject matter of this episode at all because they actually did make an effort to make this somewhat accurate. And a lot of what she goes through is realistic portrayal of what happens to children who are pulled away from human contact during their formidable years from around 8 to 18. And it is touching, but I also, the portrayal doesn't quite connect with me either. And so I'm thinking, like, I don't know, like, rewriting this to make it work short of simply completely changing the episode so that it isn't this episode at all was kind of hard for me to come with. And I finally came up with something that I think would actually make this episode work as a rewrite.
Chris, I'm on the edge of my seat actually right now, just kind of wondering what it is.
Okay. I said earlier that I think as an SF concept, so science fiction literature, there's something here. You could tell this story. And then you mentioned that we've seen it before, and that's true. But I think you could still make it work as a novel. But in order for this story to work, the first thing you have to do is you have to be able to realistically show the amount of time that it takes a feral child to recover from the trauma of what's happened to them. And that doesn't work in this episode because the jump to how quickly she regains the grasp of language, she learns to use words, wanting her mother to brush her hair, the speed at which all this happens, just it's not realistic. And so that's one reason the story doesn't connect with me. So to make it work, you have to be able to accurately portray the passage of time and the struggle for Molly, and also the struggle for Miles and Keiko as the parents. So how do you do that in a 45-minute episode? I think that each act has to be a period of time, and that the episode has to jump drastically through time with each act. But again, how do you do that and make it a story that makes any sense for it to appear on Deep Space Nine? What I came up with, and you couldn't do it in reality because it's already been done once, and I wouldn't want to weaken or lessen The Visitor. But I think if this story were structured in the way that an older Molly is telling this story to someone about this event that happened to her when she was a child, and how it affected her, and how it affected her relationship with her parents, you could do it in much the same way as The Visitor, where she's giving the narrative, and in each act, we are seeing her at the beginning going here to the planet. Golana is the name of the planet, by the way, with her parents, where she had wanted to go, and then she falls through this time portal. And she tells sort of that story of what happened, and then we know a little bit about what happened to her on the other side of the portal. And then the next act, we jump through again where she's been recovered and she talks about what happened to her, say, in the first few months that she was back on the station. And then in the next act, we see her after she's been back for maybe a year or more and what's happening to her then. And we jump through like that. And in that sense, we're able to see in a realistic way the struggle and how it impacted her life. And maybe the framing for the story is she's telling the story because of some point that she reached in her life when she's older that she never thought that she would reach because of the trauma of this and the struggle that she had to regain her humanity. That's the basic idea for my rewrite.
I like that, Chris. I think that that's good. You know, it's funny because I went a completely different way with my rewrite. In fact, I have, I think, two ideas. I think I want to share the second one first. And it was this: skip the O'Briens altogether, mm-hmm. and give us a story with Dax and Worf where they're on this planet and they somehow fall into this time portal. And they get to have an entire life together with a family and all of those kind of things.
They both fall through the time.
Yes. Like together. Somehow they both, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it, whatever. However you do it, you're Star Trek writers, you can do this. And because Gen Z is going to die, you give them this ability to be able to live a whole life together, to raise a family mm-hmm. together. And the crew is able to save them, but they don't realize what they're doing. And as they pull them back, obviously the temporal displacement pulls them back at the age that they were when they left. So you need just whatever, technobabble that. But that you've given them something that they remember and that Worf kind of takes with him, obviously, once she's gone. Mm-hmm. I think that that would just be a beautiful story.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And it's sad, I think, that they didn't think of it.
I think that maybe that's a case where if they had enough lead time knowing that Terry Farrell wasn't going to come back, they could have had time to come up with something like that. Because, as I mentioned, they threw this whole bit with Worf and Dax in here at the last minute because the episode was running short. And they realized that if we're going to get anything else out of this relationship, we've got to do it right now because she's about to not be here anymore. So, yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah, I just thought...
That would be very touching.
And obviously, at this point in the season, they definitely knew that she was going to be leaving. And if they're scrambling for scripts, I just have, man, take that idea with the time portal, find a way... I mean, even just find an anomaly of the week where Dax and Worf are just on, they're on a mission together somehow. And yeah, I think it would have been beautiful.
Yeah. This is episode 24. So this really is like the tail end.
Yeah.
So Yeah, they just didn't have time.
Well, and again, you know, episode 24 of the season, it's also sad to me that you're just kind of wasting your time at this point with the very last bit of the season.
Yeah, can I just say one more thing here that I was thinking of when I was watching this? Because this is episode 24. In Enterprise, Scott Bakula fought to get the episode count down to 22 because he believed 26 episodes is too much. And I actually think this episode supports his position because this is basically a bottle show because they needed to save money. They had to the next episode after this also is a bottle show, but it's a really good one, The Sound of Her Voice.
Well, and it has to do with the storyline of the series. I mean, it's fantastic.
Everything. Like, if they didn't need 26 episodes, they would have never needed to make this in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what Scott Bakula is saying is spot on, that maybe Star Trek didn't need 26 episodes per season. We would have had fewer clunkers over the course of the mm-hmm. franchise if they had only had 22 episodes. Yeah.
22, 24, I think is a good number. You know, I think with Star Trek, God, especially with what, you know, Manny Koto's doing by the end of, you know, the end of season 3 and end of season 4, I want mm-hmm. more episodes because that's really mm-hmm. starting to hit on all cylinders there. And, you know, you really mm-hmm. want to... You can do more story arcs at that point, like they were doing.
But if they didn't have the money for it, and so we got two more episodes and they were both clunkers because they were just trying to save money, then you would feel like, okay, well, we got good stuff.
I hear you.
Well, what's your other rewrite idea?
My other rewrite idea was, wouldn't it be interesting if the whole family falls through? Mm-hmm. And they have to do this whole kind of like Swiss Family Robinson thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And the kids start to grow up, and again, it's a show where everything kind of, it's a lot like the Dax and Worf one that I thought of, but it's just with the family, and the, you know, mm-hmm. Miles builds them this cool treehouse, you know, all this kind of stuff. And again, they get pulled back, but they get pulled back to where they were in time and who they, you know, the age they were in time, but Molly is old enough that she still remembers everything. So she actually remembers being like a teenager, and so it's very mm-hmm. weird for her because she's actually more developed in her brain at that point because of her memories. And mm-hmm. and it would just talk about an interesting sci-fi idea, having mm-hmm. a, you know, teenager living in the memories of all of that.
Yeah.
But in
an eight-year-old.
Has the memories exactly. of being 18, so yeah. That was something I thought would have been really interesting because that, again, it's a very sci-fi idea. I mean, Yoshi at that point would not remember.
Right.
Because he just, his brain wouldn't be able to comprehend it. He'd be too young. I thought that would have been a cool idea. And talk about just kind of giving the O'Briens an interesting storyline together.
Yeah. I like your Worf Dax one best of those two, though, just because of the fact, like you said, shortly she's going to be gone. And this whole life, because we get a little taste of that here in this episode, yep. right? That we're getting a glimpse of what they might be like together as parents, and we know it's all going to be ripped away. So having them live an entire lifetime together and raising a family, that would be great.
Chris, one quick one was just that I thought of. I was never a huge fan of Keiko, so I thought, you know, yeah. can we just have Keiko be the one that's lost, but they never get her back?
Well, that brings me to the closing here, which is that if we don't rewrite the episode, but we could just change one little thing about it, it's that Molly, when she went back through the portal, when she hugged her parents, the grown Molly, and she went back through that portal, she should have stayed on the other side of the portal, and Miles and Keiko should have had to deal with the rest of the series with the fact that they lost their daughter. Because what we see them struggling with all the way through the episode and what Miles finally realizes he has to do, and especially that scene, which is really touching, where she's about to go through the portal. They did build up to something there. And why these particular writers chose to render it all pointless and gut the entire story is beyond me, because they don't usually do that. So at the end of the episode, I was just left feeling like whatever emotional impact it did have on me was suddenly gone. So I would just have her step through and she's gone. Molly's gone from the show.
Yeah, and I think that would have been something that we hadn't really seen happen on Star mm-hmm. Trek before, and unique, interesting storyline, and definitely would have made this episode yeah. matter more. So I guess you could
kind of say that, you know, I mean, Wesley goes away on the Next Generation, but we know that he's not, it's not like this, you know, it's like we know he's becoming a traveler. He's going to some other place to, for new horizons.
Yeah. And, you know, again, too, with Wesley, he's also becoming godlike at the same time. So it's right. not like he yeah. left and we're like, oh no, yeah. no, Wesley, this is, she left and she's on a planet all on her own 300 years in the past.
Yeah. Any final thoughts? Anything else that you want to mention about this before we close out here, Matthew?
Well, Chris, it just made me think that, it would have been nice to have, at this point of the series, just to focus on Dax and Worf. And even if we had just made them the A story and the other part the B story, I think that this would have been great, especially if the whole A story was them thinking about having kids, you know, really seriously talking about it, or finding out that Gen Z is pregnant. It would have, I mean, again, huge implications then for when she does get killed. And yeah. I think even greater impetus for how we feel about Dukat at that point. So I just think it's a missed opportunity for some things that could have been done to make the series a lot more heart-wrenching, especially at the end when they knew they were going to have to kill her. Yeah, just would have been incredibly powerful. So, you know, but that happens at this point. It's season 6. You're winding down that, and you're tired as writers. Sometimes things just don't turn out the way you would have hoped. And, you know, I'll let that one slide because season 7 starts off with an amazing bang after the season 6 finish. And really, season 7 doesn't really let up.
Well, this episode is a missed opportunity in the storytelling and in this position within the series. So, well, those are our rewrite ideas. We would love to know yours, so let us know. You can send us feedback at trek.fm/contact. We have a contact form there. Of course, you know how to reach us on Twitter, trekfm, facebook.com/trekfm. And we would love to hear from you, and maybe we will talk about some of your rewrites later on when we do a feedback show again. And also, speaking of the feedback show, we've gotten some more feedback this past week, so thank you very much for that. And we will be doing another Orb of Mail show down the road, so we will be saving up your feedback for that. We'll try to reply to you personally by email if we can, but as far as talking about it on the show, that'll be coming up down the road. Well, Matthew, rewrites, we mentioned too, The Journey does them sometime. I don't know if they've done one this week, but we have been talking about all sorts of other things on the network. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Everything that we do has to exist inside of this little box.
Window,
yeah,
if you will.
Right. And you can do whatever you want inside there, but once you step outside, you know, it's the real world.
Earl Grey.
That's, you know what I mean? And then Star Trek V is all about crapping all over the rest of the movies that just came out.
Axanar, the official podcast.
When you're in the edit bay, as soon as you put one image next to another, it's this instant gratification. It's this great creative jolt, which happens every time you start juxtaposing your images. And when you start seeing things fall into place, it's really galvanizing and it's really thrilling, actually. And I love feeding off that kind of energy.
The Ready Room.
Well, you know, time is not really linear, Char. So the monkey, he's always been there and he always will be.
I take the Janeway stance on time travel. It gives me a headache.
The Orb.
Batman also creates a contingency plan for all the other superheroes just in case something goes wrong with them. So
what does he do for the Wonder Twins, for example? Like, how's he going to take them out?
I think he just separates them internally so they can't smack their hands together.
To the Journey! We have like a whole bunch of geek aliens, like they're wearing their own superhero t-shirts, they're eating Hot Pockets, they have headphones on, and they're all in their own little, you know, 24th century room, but they're like, dude, I totally just pwned the Voyager. Commentary, Trek Stars.
And underlines the goal of Prexy Gail Berman to re-energize the pipeline while revitalizing the PAR brand with top-tier talent such as Abrams. I love trades.
You have
They're
no
so...
idea what you're saying at this point.
Warp 5.
He can put her mind at ease about these kinds of things because he can just, you know how Trip is, like, let's have some catfish and, like, just hang out. You know,
I was just thinking that. Continuing mission.
We actually spoke with CBS legal team, and that was one of the things that we had told them, is that all of our visuals were all original scenes, all of our animation was going to be original, all of our music would be original, so we would not be stealing any content from the original era. Mm-hmm. And they liked that a lot.
Literary Treks.
And I just love that because it is very true. You know, Picard in some ways kind of has that Yoda-ness about him where he will kind of speak in a riddle and he wants you to figure it out.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We cover every aspect of Star Trek here on the network, and you can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for Trek.fm or the name of the show you want to listen to, and you'll find us there. A quick reminder about reviews. Our review promotion is in its final days as you're listening to this, so be sure to review The Orb. And if you already reviewed The Orb, you can review the master feed, and that will count as well. And you can review us on iTunes and Stitcher, and then go to trek.fm/review and submit the form that you find there, and that will get you in the drawing for some great Star Trek prizes, which include Blu-rays, DVDs, spaceships, art badges, and more. And we thank everyone who has reviewed us so far, and we'll share some more reviews with you on an upcoming show. Now, Matthew, we've already told people where to contact us this time if they want to share their thoughts on the show. When you're not, you know, jumping through different time portals to see if you can get to the one where Texas A&M wins the national championship 10 years in a row, reference to the shirt you're wearing today, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on Literary Treks, where we talk about the books and comics of Star Trek. In fact, we just this last week talked about a comic involving some of the Deep Space Nine crew in a universe that may or may not be the JJ-verse. And then, Chris, you can also find me at my own personal blog, 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not hopping through time portals trying to find that right one that has Ensign Leffler in it and you two are together, where can we find you?
You know, we're together in many universes out there, Matthew. So many possibilities.
There are always possibilities, as Spock would say.
You can find me on Twitter. Also, my username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/CBrianJones, and I have my website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, besides Literary Treks, you can find me on a lot of different shows. The Ready Room, Matter Stream, Continuing Mission, Warp 5, Hyperchannel, and I co-host the official Star Trek Axanar podcast with Alec Peters. So tune into all those shows and find out what else I'm talking about. It's usually not Leffler, but sometimes it is. And before we let you go, we would like to remind you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com, the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere. You can get an audiobook of your choice absolutely free just for trying Audible. They have a lot of great Star Trek books there. They also have great books in every genre. Most new books that come out these days have an audiobook that comes out at the same time, and you can get them all through Audible. To get your free book, just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. Choose whatever you want, and there's nothing to lose because if at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, you get to keep that book. But when you try Audible, you're really helping us keep The Orb coming to you every single week. So support us and support Audible by going to audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we really thank them for their support of the show and the network.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into The Orb.